Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There is no better group of ones for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with some of your gardening quandaries. Today, we welcome an old friend back to the podcast. And he's retiring soon, so I thought we'd get him back on while we can. Colin Randall, from Thompson & Morgan, is a font of all knowledge when it comes to new vegetables, and we'll be discussing all the latest introduction of vegetable cultivars in their latest catalogue. My thanks to Westland Horticulture, sponsors of this podcast, and of course to my producer, Charlie Jones. What a week! Monday I was at Luton Hoo for the Garden Centre Association conference. They announced that it was their 53rd. I've been to every one, made me feel really old. Then, obviously, into London on a Tuesday as usual, into the Sun offices before I flew to the IPM at Essen in Germany. Goodness, 9 halls, all kinds of horticultural goodies, so many people to meet. My brain absolutely spinning and spinning. Hope to bring you back some news next week on everything that we've seen and heard. Last weekend, it was cold, wet and frosty weather over the weekend, but at least it gave me time to do the VAT return and to make a batch of marmalade. This time of year, I do like to make a lot of fresh marmalade, and there's 11 one-pound jars now standing on the kitchen work surface. Should see me for a few breakfasts in the next few months. And the best of the garden centres, you know, sitting on Monday at Luton, who, watching the 4 inspectors that go and visit all of the, I think it's 400 plus members of the Garden Centre Association now, and showing us the pictures of the best. Goodness, garden centres have changed. I'm interested, of course, in plants, and my congratulations go to Perrywood Garden Centre in Essex and Cowles up in the northeast for winning the Premier Awards for plants, the Ruxley Rose Award. Boy, they have some fantastic plants, and the competition is fierce. We'll come back and talk a bit more about the Garden Centre Association and what they're offering next week. It might be January, and in some people's minds, a quiet time for gardens and gardening, but the latest data from Barclaycard shows there were record spending on garden centres through December. The sales were up 3.2% apparently across the country. Mind you, UK restaurant sales overall were up 9%. So perhaps that accounts for some of the 3.2% at garden centres. Of course, last December we didn't have snow, which we had the previous year, and a fall of snow doesn't half upset the retail garden trade. We have almost constant comment about Brexit, and I was interested to read that UK growers continue to expect opportunities for import substitution. I mean, AC Gotham and Son, for example, have planted 220,000 more fruit trees so far this winter in Medwayswale and East Kent orchards. Boy, trees today, apples and pears are very heavy producing, and so 220,000 are going to give some tons of fruit in the next few years. Claire Bishop of Dobbies, who have 40 garden centres now, tells us that Monstera, the Swiss cheese plant, Senecio and Sansevieria, mother-in-law's tongue, are now top sellers. You know, we're back where we were in the 60s and 70s with Tom's Weeds and those greenhouse plants. good to see some really nice live material being brought into living rooms. Many are much too dry with central heating, and these evergreen plants will do a lot to clean the air. Claire says that the sale of succulents shows no sign of slowing down either. Somebody, somewhere, is growing a lot more plants. The temperatures may have been up in the 50s earlier in January, but gardeners need to be cautious. You know, we got plenty more weeks before we get into spring. But it is worth, if you've got the urge to start sowing, to get a few aubergine and peppers sown indoors, because they're very slow to germinate and get established. They'll sit on the windowsill for weeks, won't be in your way, but of course will crop much earlier if you've started them off earlier. I like to sow one or two seeds of cucumbers too at this time. Pick one of the mini cucumbers. They have fruits that are half the size, just 2 or 3 inches long, but several of them at each leaf joint. And if you sow one or two seeds now, you'll be picking cucumbers off plants on windowsills by about the second or third week in May. And of course, it's the usual system when you're sowing cucurbits. Get a 3.5 inch or 9 centimetre pot, half fill it with seed compost, sow the cucumber seed on its side into moist compost and put it somewhere really warm. Up in the top of the airing cupboard works very well. But look at it each day, because they germinate very quickly. And as soon as you see the first sign of growth, move it to a very light windowsill, certainly during the daytime. And then as that seedling develops and the two seed leaves stretch out over the top of the pot, then top it up with compost. That bit of stem will produce roots. And by giving that half pot at the time of sowing start, and then topping up, almost like earthing up potatoes, you'll have a much shorter and compact seedling to grow on. And then, of course, it'll need a split cane just to hold the stem. And as I say, with luck, you'll be cutting fruits about the third week in May.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
My guest this week is Colin Randall. Actually, we were inviting him back. He was on a little while ago talking about his 50 years experience in the seed trade, particularly vegetables and potatoes. And I have to tell you, if I need any kind of advice on vegetable, then Colin's the man. For a number of years, chair of the RHS Vegetable Committee, and an absolute wealth of knowledge. Now, Colin, I hear that you're going to retire. How on earth can I manage if you retire?
Well, I better give you my direct line, Peter, I think, hadn't I? It's caught up with me, I suppose, that almost don't have to count the days, because it's officially the 29th of March Brexit Day that I retire.
I don't really agree with young people like you retiring at that early age, but there we are. But the reason I wanted to get you on the line today was because your latest seed catalogue has just come through to me. And there are several vegetable kinds I haven't grown and don't know. And that always worries me. And so I thought, yes, we'll speak to the man who knows the background to all these things. I mean, first of all, on the front cover, we've got all season mange to peas. Now, what's that all about?
Well, so we're introducing a few collections of vegetables that can be mixed as such. The subjects under still under common market EU regulations, where we can mix cabbages, a range of cabbage varieties together, or pea varieties together. But it would still be taboo to try and mix cabbage, cauliflower, and Brussels sprout all together. We'd have the wrath of the ministry onto us if we did that sort of thing. But we found it does, in these instances, it's a benefit to gardeners that they can have a mix of varieties within one packet, instead of having to buy three or four packets of individual varieties and only want a few seeds out of them. And it seems to have been taken up very well with their gardeners. They seem very happy with the concept that we're doing.
Yeah, you sound as if you're pretty busy in that office. People are really after seeds, aren't they, in January?
Yeah,
but I mean, picking that up, I see you've got an all-season sprouting broccoli, for example. Yeah. And there are three varieties in the mixture: Mendocino, Red Admiral, and Burbank. If we have those three and we sow them all at about the same time, does it mean that we'll have a much longer harvest period?
It will extend the harvest period. I suppose I ought to say, really, with all these mixes that we do, you do need, ideally, to sow all the seeds in the packet, because you won't exactly know which varieties are which. You'll get the extended season that the packet description gives. And they're always, it does depend on the soil conditions, the type. You know, every season's different, isn't it? But it gives an indication, like with the with all the mixes, that how many weeks that you may get a crop off of a prolonged period.
I mean, traditionally, I'm talking my father and grandfather's time, we would have grown both purple and white, and they made really huge plants, didn't they?
Yeah.
The modern varieties are much more compact and produce far more spears.
They seem to be more compact. I think the breeding, and similarly with Brussels sprouts and kale, to a certain extent, the breeder seem to have given the yield of a variety on a smaller plant in a lot of instances, and certainly the Burbank and the Mendocino, they were still reasonably, they had some decent vigour. I suppose it does depend how much nitrogen or how rotted the manure or chicken muck in your soil is, because it will, you know, brassicas will go on in leaps and bounds and make a lot of leaf if you've got too much nitrogen underneath them.
Well, if I put them on where the sweet pea trench was the year before, boy, I get some big purple sprouting plants once they get their feet down. Yeah. Now, moving on a little bit, there's tomato bite size. I mean, I've not grown that. I suppose it's not that unusual. There are so many tomatoes now.
Oh, there's so many. I mean, I have a job trying to keep up with everything, Peter. So I can see the breeders will get to some of the commercial trials if we haven't doing anything ourselves. On can't do everything. And bite size is one that I saw at the same time as sweet aperitif, before either of them were actually introduced. Seen them in the commercial trial up in East Yorkshire. Bite size is one I liked. I took a shine to that one more than the sweet aperitif, but it's sort of sister lines to a certain extent. I found the flavour more to my liking in the bite size. It's got a very high sweetness level, but the balance with the acidity in it gave a little more lingering taste on the taste tests.
You know, if it's come from the same stable as sweet aperitif,
yeah, which has gone on in leaps and bounds. I mean, that's a hugely popular variety now.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, can we go on again then? Because on the next page to bite-sized tomato, I see new beetroot morello, and you say, eat everything. Now, what's that all about?
It's one of the, like, to be fair, with pretty much all the modern breeding, beetroot breeding, is sweetness levels are there from an early stage. And that sort of then, get that up in through the stems and the leaves as the plant gets larger. No, I just chop them up and, I mean, I use a lot of things in stir fry all sorts of things, but the actual beet itself, beet bulb, just wash it under the tap and just munch on it raw like you can all the modern F1 varieties, you know, from Pablo through Patolo and Wodan, Kestrel.
I mean, you pull them, what, at golf ball size or a bit bigger and then just eat them raw?
Yep.
Goodness.
Yeah, and the stems and the leaves, just chop up in salad, or stir fry them. I mean, they can, you of course, use them as a cooked vegetable. As they mature, again, to be fair, on pretty much all the modern beetroot varieties, as they get bigger than cricket balls, they still don't go woody.
Yeah.
They've still got the texture. Hugely popular subject anyway, year in, year out. Boltard is in the top five, you know, the older varieties. But this one, Morello, as the roots mature, when you slice them, they do have a pale white rings within the flesh.
Well,
not noticeable as they're small, but as they mature, a bit like Chioggia, and a lot of gardeners will know that one as an old Italian heirloom, candy cane beetroot, often used for baking because of its sweetness levels. And that's got the red and white striping within the root as a variety.
So what happens with the exhibition then? Because in the old days, we always wanted to grow beetroot without any rings.
Oh, yeah. It didn't have to show any blemishes, did it?
No.
Get a little bit cut out of the... but on the show bench, a lot more in recent years, they don't tend to, or don't have to, slice bits off of... the root vegetables on the display.
Why is that then? You do a fair bit of judging, don't you?
I think whether some of the show, they had such perfect specimens, and there was another show a few days away, sort of thing. They wanted to use them again. It was a bit difficult when you go cutting bits off of off the vegetables.
Let's move on again to courgette sure thing. I mean, I haven't come across that before.
No, that's it's been around a while in the USA, part of what Burpee Seeds, a huge company out in America. And it's one of these that for early sowings or early plantings, if you can, or if anyone's got the luxury of a bit of warmth in a polytunnel or in the greenhouse, can plant one of these a little earlier. The female flower doesn't actually need pollinating. It will produce a fruit that doesn't wither and fall off and die off through lack of pollination in its early stages. But then if you grow it outdoors, then in the normal way of courgettes through the summer, still making the male and female flowers. And of course, the insects will do the job for you, but there's been several breeders trying to get this a little more forward. They had done trials in the USA. I've not seen anything over here done with it on wrapping the flower, the female flower, up to get a small fruit, because it'd be seedless, the fruit, because of course no pollination, so there won't be any the actual flesh won't have any seed visible in it, which you get with normal courgettes, of course, especially if they get bigger as extra large courgettes or as marrows, they do have seeds in. But in intents and purposes, I mean, it's quite a strong flavoured one, this one, because it did have a taste of a few fruits, because green is still, all green courgettes are still predominantly a bit like orange carrots, isn't it, with gardeners? That's what they see in the supermarkets, and they'll always grow green ones. Yeah. But if you try the coloured, especially the yellow and the Lebanese pale white cream one varieties. They're thicker fleshed and a totally different flavour to the green courgettes that you normally grow. And personally, I find them a lot better. Much tastier.
You prefer the cream to the yellows, yeah?
I prefer the other way around, the yellows to the greens.
Right, yes. Yeah. But going back to that Shaw thing...
So the Shaw thing is really...
I didn't know that there was self-pollinating, and I must try that in a polytunnel, just tying the flower petals together. It's interesting that the female flower will self-pollinate.
It will. Doesn't need any insect activity. Of course, I suppose the in the usual way with most courgettes, it's the early season, especially if you get a cold start to the late spring. You know, you can't really put courgettes out until middle of May unless you've got plenty of fleece handy, and then because of late frosts or extra cold nights that they don't appreciate in that early stage. The first batches of flowers for the first couple of weeks tend to be all males. You don't get any female ones on courgettes early on in the season. Now, because you can see some very good trials in Holland in the last 2 years with later courgettes going the other way and planting out in August, putting plants out and getting fruit in through September. Of course, powdery mildew will come in. The breeders don't seem very bothered in trying to get powdery mildew resistance in courgettes. And, although there has been a little bit of work, I believe, on electrolyzed water as a tonic type of thing, but I think that was a commercial bit of work going on that I haven't heard any more about. It was a couple of years ago that was for some of the smaller growers who wanted to keep the plants mildew-free longer, to keep the season going longer.
So much to know about, Colin. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then moving you on again, you've got a new spring onion, White Star, with larger bulbs and stronger taste.
They're pretty pungent. I want very pungent, I suppose. I think gardeners will, when they see the picture that we've got in the catalogue, and think, oh, I've seen those, in the supermarkets. They're quite expensive. You get a little bunch of four bulbs, about the size of golf balls, I suppose. And they have been selling those in the main supermarkets for 3 or 4 years now. So they're grown for that purpose. So you don't sow them so thickly as you would a Paris silver skin Barletta type. You give them a little more space or thin them and just use the thinnings as normal spring onions to get a larger bulb. And so it's a silver skin, but they're larger, Peter, and they're pretty potent. If anyone just wants a mild onion, which I must admit I'm not much one for pungent ones, I'll eat the leaves. I use a lot of that in my stir fry, and the missus will eat the bulbs, but they are quite pungent.
Sounds like Jack Spratt, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit.
Finally, Colin, I have to make mention of the kohlrabi cossack. We saw that at the Elsham Trials last autumn, and I see you're listing that.
Yes, it's superb. Before I joined the seed trade, I'd never seen one. In my school days or my first bit of gardening practice with the head gardener, I mean, grew some turnips and some swedes on the kitchen garden plot, but kohlrabi, I'd never seen one until I joined Sutton's. But no one, even all those years ago, so it's been not going for 50 years, been trying to get gardeners to grow the kohlrabi. Another eat-all veg, there's no waste to them. But this one's the extra, sort of goes from one extreme to the other. The cossacks for actually growing is a huge bulb, and it stays very tender, no fibre. It's superb. Just you sliced up in battens. There's very, you eat the leaves, of course. Eat the stems. Chuck them in the stir fry or in the salad. It's a very, you know, it's a very mild member of the brassica family. There's no harsh bitterness or cabbagey taste to it, really. And I really wish gardeners would try them.
Well, the two of us, Colin, must see if we can encourage more. The big root that I brought back, the size of a rugby ball from those October trials, is still sitting out by my back door, stored perfectly. And when I cut a slice and get people to eat it like watermelon, I haven't found anybody that doesn't like it. So together we need to encourage people.
We do, yeah.
So kohlrabi Cossack. Colin, it's great to chat to you. Welcome your advice always, and we must certainly keep in touch in your retirement. This weekend, 26th of January, there's a snowdrop sale at Middleton House, at Bull's Cross, Enfield, and there will be a number of specialist nurseries exhibiting spring flowering bulbs there. There'll be rare and unusual snowdrops at prices from £5 to £1,000. Actually, if you do pay a reasonable price for a pot with one snowdrop in it, planted in the garden and given a bit of care, I'll tell you, that'll increase in number quite quickly and should prove quite good value for money. Whether you get your £1,000 back or not, well, then that's another matter. Somebody might tread on it by mistake, and that would be an expensive step. There are welly walks at the Gardens of Heligan until the 31st of the month. Those walks are aimed at families, and wellies are a must, with puddles and streams to splash through. I'm sure kids will love that. And also down in the southwest, there's a Healthy Hedges Day at the RHS Rosemore Gardens. They'll be covering a selection of different kinds of plants for hedging, how to plant them and how to prune. So if you're a bit interested in hedging or planting some hedging or caring for hedges, then there's a day at the RHS Rosemore that would be well worth a visit. My thanks to Westland Horticulture, sponsors of this podcast. And thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your garden. We'll be back next Thursday. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.